Hi, my name is Brian Luke Seward, and this podcast is titled Coming Up for Air. I'd like to give you a few definitions of stress, and first and foremost, know that stress is a colossal topic. And I say that because it affects so many different disciplines, and so many different disciplines in the field of academia tend to claim it as their own, including the field of psychology, sociology, anthropology, physiology, theology, and probably several more I can't think of at the moment. One of the first definitions that came to us came via Hans Selye, the famous researcher in stress physiology, who said that, in essence, stress is wear and tear in the body. And I think we all know this to be true. In fact, I often ask when I give presentations, why do they call it a tension headache? Another definition of stress comes to us from Richard Lazarus, very, very famous psychologist, who says that stress is the inability to cope with problems. That's a very cognitive-based definition, whereas the first one by Hans Selye is more in terms of physiology. A third definition says that stress is a loss of emotional control. And I think we all have been there, and we also have seen examples demonstrated by other people, perhaps most commonly driving our cars during rush hour. Another definition that I like describes stress as the absence of inner peace. And although it's very, very difficult to define and measure inner peace, I think we all know intuitively what that means. And you cannot be stressed and be relaxed at the same time. It is virtually impossible. Now, if you were to get all the experts in the field of stress management together and say to them, we need to have a common definition that you all agree upon, you might hear them say this. Stress is a perceived threat, and then in parentheses, real or imagined, to our mind, body, spirit, and emotions. We often say perceived because in this case here, you can have two people experiencing the same phenomena, the same situation, where one person is ecstatic and happy, yet the second person is freaking out. In this case here, stress as a perception is going to vary from person to person. We also talk about the idea of real or imagined because many people can make mountains out of molehills. And I think we've all experienced that personally ourselves. I like the quote from Mark Twain who says, I'm an old man now, and I've known a great many problems in my life, most of which never happened. Before we can talk about stress and stress management, indeed, coming up for air, let's take a look at the bigger picture. To do that, I like to define how stress fits into the idea of holistic wellness. The definition that I like best for holistic wellness is this. It is the integration, balance, and harmony of mind, body, spirit, and emotions. Now, stress will definitely have an impact on those four components of the holistic wellness paradigm. To begin with, let's take a look at the idea of emotional well-being, since this is where stress really plays a part. The definition that I like best for this quadrant of the holistic wellness paradigm is that emotional well-being is best described as the ability to feel and express the entire range of human emotions, but to control them, not be controlled by them. In simplest terms, there are thought to be two stress emotions. Now, actually, there's perhaps several hundred, but they fall nicely into two categories, anger and fear. Anger is the fight response. Fear is the flight response. Now, neither one of these emotions is bad. And the reason why I say that is they are part of this emotional spectrum. But these emotions of anger and fear and all they cascade into will become bad or be negative in terms of our health if they are left unresolved. Both anger and fear are thought to be healthy emotions because they're thought to be survival emotions. We will elicit feelings of anger and fear for physical survival. And the example I typically give is if the room that you're in should happen to go up in flames, hypothetically, of course, you would need to have fear kick in so you could walk out the door or run out the door to safety and not become a piece of toast. Well, anger and fear are survival emotions for our physical survival, but they become negative emotions when we hang on to them longer than is necessary to survive a physical threat. I think we all know of examples, whether personal or from those we've seen in other people, where the feelings of anger and fear are maintained for prolonged periods of time to control either ourselves or other people. Today, in terms of stress management, we see a huge problem with unresolved issues of anger. And the reason for this, I think, is because we are a nation of spoiled brats. We have it quite good in this country, yet we also have the expectation of entitlements. We think that as Americans, we should have all kinds of things coming to us, and when those expectations are not met, anger tends to ensue. If you take a look at the headlines today, you'll see that we have all kinds of demonstrations of unresolved anger issues, whether it be road rage, phone rage, sports rage, air rage, you name it. We see all kinds of rage demonstrated because of unmet expectations. When I talk about the anatomy of anger, I typically describe that every time you get angry, it's because of an unmet expectation. And it's unrealistic to think that we should have no expectations. But in terms of holistic stress management, what we'd like to suggest is that as an expectation is not met, we can quickly learn to fine-tune that expectation and not lose our own personal power. Every unresolved anger issue becomes a control issue, whether we are trying to control other people or ourselves. And this control is actually an illusion because as we try and control other people or ourselves, we truly give our power away. Those who begin to study the ideas of mismanaged anger have classified this into four categories. I'd like to describe these to you and see if you can recognize any one of these in your own personality or behavior. The first style of mismanaged anger we call the somatizer, and this is somebody who doesn't express their anger, they suppress it. They never get angry, and one reason for this is because they want to maintain a sense of acceptance from their peers, family, and friends, and so they never get angry. The word soma means body in Latin, and as a consequence of suppressing their anger, these feelings manifest as physical problems in the body. Some of the most common examples would include things like TMJ, temporomandibular joint dysfunction, migraine headaches, a lot of diseases that are called autoimmune diseases, where the body quite literally attacks the body, including lupus, Epstein-Barr, and fibromyalgia. We also see the category of ulcers. Now, the research is quite clear that ulcers are the result of a bacteria. But what most people don't know is that about 80% of the world's population has that bacteria in their stomach. And 20% of the people who don't have this often are known to have ulcers as well. So the real question is, what triggers an ulcer? And the answer seems to be unresolved issues of anger. The second category of mismanaged anger is called the exploder. And these people make the headlines. A typical example might be, man walks into McDonald's with Uzi and shoots 40 kids. We see this on a regular basis of explosive behavior, which is another way to describe intimidation. Like a volcano that explodes, their hot lava goes in the path of those who they'd like to intimidate. Some more benign but also serious examples would include things like I mentioned before, road rage, phone rage, sports rage. The third style of mismanaged anger is called the self-punisher. And these are people who feel guilty about feeling angry and tend to gravitate toward what is commonly known as an obsessive compulsive or addictive behavior. Perhaps the most common example of this would include overeating, because food is a pacifier. But we also see excess sleeping, excess exercise. One time a person said to me, what about shopping, retail therapy? And that certainly qualifies, because when the bills come in, that's a form of punishment. So once again, I'd like to remind you that unresolved anger issues are control issues. But the irony is that it's an illusion of control, because you're actually giving your power away. The exploder and the underhander are trying to control other people and doing a terrible job with it. The somatizer and the self-punisher are trying to control themselves and also doing a terrible job with it. We tend to have one of these styles most predominant in our personality. However, it's very likely that we could do a couple of these. I've often had people tell me that they are an underhander at work, but at home, they're a self-punisher. One thing we suggest in terms of holistic stress management is to first recognize what your mismanaged anger style is. So before you can begin to change behavior, which tends to promote stress, we need to actually recognize what the behavior is and then work to remove the label so we no longer have that as part of who we are. I mentioned before that the connection between stress and disease is colossal. This, to me, again, should be headline news every night. We now know that unresolved issues of anger and fear tend to suppress the immune system. And specifically, the stress hormone that does this is cortisol. Cortisol is secreted from your adrenal gland. You actually have two adrenal glands that sit on top of your kidneys, and these glands are there for your physical protection in terms of fight or flight. But when we don't engage in fight or flight, when we sit behind a computer terminal for 10, 12, 14 hours, we begin to create this toxic chemical cocktail of hormones that wreak havoc on the body. Cortisol is the one that does the most damage to our immune system, because when it gets done with all of its other responsibilities for fight or flight, and we don't know why this happens, it tends to destroy white blood cells. One of my friends went through a bone marrow transplant because of a disease he has called Hodgkin's lymphoma. I learned that one of the drugs he's on is cortisol, because this does suppress the immune system. In this case here, so his body won't reject the new bone marrow that he got. If there's any doubt about stress and disease, it could be quickly summed up in the information regarding the connection between cortisol and the suppression of the immune system. So in terms of holistic stress management, we typically offer a holistic perspective that says we need to learn to engage, practice, and utilize effective coping techniques for stress. And coping techniques are those aspects which tend to help us change the perception of stress so we no longer feel threatened by it. Examples of coping techniques that are effective would include things like time management, cognitive restructuring or reframing a situation so that we can see the positive, not the negative. Journaling is a great example, as is things like art therapy, creative problem solving, and one of my favorites, humor therapy or comic relief. The purpose of an effective coping technique is to increase awareness of what the problem is and steer you in the direction of resolution. Now, in honesty, most people don't use just one coping technique. They tend to use several. And this is what we call a multimodal approach to steer you in the direction of resolution. There are many ineffective coping techniques, and these are our biggest health concerns today. And they fall in the category of addictions, such as alcohol, drugs, and violence. For us to really have an effect on our stress, we need to engage in effective coping techniques that, again, increase the awareness of the problem and help us learn to resolve it. But doing that is not enough. We also need to engage in effective relaxation techniques, because ultimately, this cocktail of stress hormones will engage our body into fight or flight. What makes a technique for relaxation effective is to bring the body back to homeostasis. And there are many ways to do this. Each one engages one or more of the five senses. So massage therapy is a great technique for reducing muscle tension through the sense of touch. Music therapy, listening to great relaxing music, is a technique that engages the sense of sound. Food can be a great means for relaxation, uses the sense of taste, and you get the idea. All techniques for relaxation that are effective substitute or replace sensory stimuli that is thought to be stressful with sensations through the five senses that promote homeostasis. In other words, to bring back our heart rates to a resting state, our blood pressure, our muscle tension, and all metabolic aspects of calm and tranquility. What are some tips for coming up for air? Well, there are several, but I'd like to give you a couple right now. The first I call establishing healthy boundaries. We live in a day and age right now where there are so many poor healthy boundaries. And this includes taking our personal life into the work site, as well as taking our work home with us. So we feel as if we're constantly accessible, never having time for ourselves. We also are a nation that watches way too much television. Perhaps you think to yourself you're just going to sit down for half an hour and watch your favorite TV show, and you realize after several hours you've been sucked into this whirlpool of multimedia entertainment. So we need to establish healthy boundaries, and this will only impact our optimal well-being when we do so. A second tip for coming up for air I call decompression. Decompression means we need to decrease the amount of sensory stimulation, sensory overload, sensory bombardment that we encounter on a regular basis. In other words, we need to take time to step away from all this, and perhaps the expression unplugged is most fitting here, where we can step out and unplug from the world, from technology, and allow ourselves to come back to a place of peace and quiet. There are a lot of different modalities for healing that fall in the category of decompression. Massage therapy is great. And one reason why massage therapy is thought to be so beneficial is that muscle tension is the number one symptom of stress. A third tip for coming up for air is physical exercise. And given the headlines about obesity in this country today, it's no mistake that we see a very lethargic and perhaps even apathetic population that does not like to exercise. I typically tell people now that the best reason for exercise is not to lose weight, although that certainly helps. I am of the humble opinion that the best reason for physical exercise, where you maintain an elevated heart rate for a prolonged period of time, they often call this the target heart rate in the target zone, is to flush out the stress hormones that are used for fight or flight. Now, exercise actually is fight or flight. You are engaged in the fight or flight response when you're doing physical exercise. But in this case, you are using the hormones for their intended purpose. Whereas when you do no exercise and sit in front of a computer terminal for hours on end, this toxic cocktail of chemical hormones will have an effect on all aspects of your physiology, and specifically your immune system. The current research suggests today that our American population is walking around with a suppressed immune system. And so exercise is known to enhance the immune system by flushing out the stress hormones that are not needed for fight or flight. A fourth technique for coming up for air is one of my favorites. I call it comic relief, or tickling the funny bone. And I'd like to suggest a challenge to all people listening here, and that is to try and find one funny thing a day to help elevate your level of comic relief to a place of emotional balance. Because by and large, most people are walking around emotionally unbalanced with a preponderance of emotions from the anger and fear side and not enough from the joy and happiness side. So if you make a challenge to yourself to look for one humorous thing a day, I guarantee this will help. Whether it's walking down through the Hallmark aisle in the grocery store, or picking up a good book to read, or watching a good DVD, something that can help you balance your scale of emotions. The last and final tip for coming up for air is the idea of meditation. We're in a time of incredible sensory bombardment, information overload. And meditation is best defined as increased concentration, which leads to increased awareness. If you consider that your mind is constantly being bombarded by external stimulation, as well as hearing all kinds of suggestions from internal interruptions, primarily from the ego, then we know that the mind cannot be clear with thought. Meditation is a means to clear your mind of the ego chitter-chatter, as well as the external stimuli, to give you clarity of thought. Perhaps the best way to describe meditation is like deleting old emails, so you have more room for clarity with what you need to focus on in the course of a regular working day. So, to summarize, we are definitely living in stressful times, and a large part of the stress comes from a lot of choices, a lot of technology, sensory bombardment, information overload, and the addiction to technologies from cell phones, email, and the internet. To find balance in our lives, we need to unplug from the sensory stimulation and place our priorities back into balance as well. So coming up for air shouldn't be a drudgery. It should be an ecstasy that we accomplish on a regular basis.